life seems like even more of a day-to-day activity over the past couple of years, as it's harder to have a longer-term vision when so many of us are understandably focused on the pandemic and the number of COVID cases and how those impact our families and jobs. That reality didn't stop research teams at the Smithsonian from working together with representatives of ASU's Center for Science and the Imagination on the Futures exhibition. CSI was specifically part of Future Visions 2071. Earlier, I spoke with two of ASU's contributors, Tochi Onyebuchi, an author who contributed stories, including one about the possibility of mosquitoes actually helping society, and Brian Miller, who drew 8 posters that took inspiration from research done by the Smithsonian. I began by asking Miller about how the images illustrate his style of art and the Smithsonian's work.
The Futures exhibit, it starts when you walk in with a look at the past. And one of the ideas that Smithsonian and ASU Center for Science and the Imagination had come up with was looking back at world's fairs from the past. So we wanted the visual style of the artwork to be somewhere between like a world's fair poster and maybe like an attraction poster that you might find at an amusement park, but something that's fun and exciting, colorful, and hopefully, you know, reaches out and connects with people immediately. One good example of that might be the asteroid mining artwork that I created for the National Air and Space Museum, because it relates to the future of science and this imagined idea that we might someday, you know, go to asteroids and mine important minerals from asteroids. And that's a big topic with all sorts of pros and cons about how it might help the Earth and our environment. But we need to simplify that down into just one visual. And so it's a very clean poster type of illustration of this like large industrial robot mining the asteroid. And I think it's that idea that we could just connect with people with one illustration and hopefully get at least part of that bigger message across without a lot of explanation.
And Brian, even with some of the heavy topics covered in the posters, the style itself is really, it's fun to look at. How important is that when you're trying to get more people to access this kind of thing?
Thank you. I think it is important. I mean, you know, artwork can serve many purposes, but the main purpose for this artwork is to communicate a hopeful future and a future where we might want to live, and also a future where people feel involved. You know, so much of our lives we can feel dictated to, like someone else is making our decision and the future just happens to us. And what we're trying to do is present people the opportunity to imagine and participate in what the future could be for them.
And Tochi, before we get into some of your specific writing, there's a pigeonholing of certain aspects of looking into the future where there's the word dystopia is often used. Do you think it's important for this project to have more hope, more positive vision? Did that work its way into your writing?
It's funny. I think the optimism that may exist in the stories came about as a result very much of the collaborative process. Each story was preceded by a workshop with one of the research institutes at the Smithsonian. And it was during those conversations that I was constantly confronted by this sense of optimism from the research teams with regards to the work that they were doing, to ameliorate the various issues that they were facing, whether it was the erasure of the contribution of women to the sciences over the course of history, whether it was with regards to ecological conservation. And I couldn't help but let some of that optimism filter into the stories themselves. And it ended up being a very sort of spiritually restorative exercise writing those stories. My general bailiwick isn't necessarily optimism or just like joy in general. I'm very good at drama and heartbreak. And so this was very much a step outside of my comfort zone, oddly enough, but it was one that I was very happy that I was sort of forced to take.
Well, you mentioned collaboration. Can we talk about how much cross-disciplinary aspects does this whole Smithsonian project bring about?
I learned so much as a result of those workshops. I don't know, it was very cross-disciplinary in that, you know, we spoke with teams across a variety of disciplines and addressing a variety of different concerns. And so, you know, I'm talking with marine biologists, I'm talking with historians, I'm talking with librarians, I'm talking with scholars across a number of fields. And so I can't help but you know, style myself a little bit as a polymath when writing these stories, because there's so much cross-disciplinary information that I'm able to draw from.
How daunting is it, even if that's part of your creative background, to try to do something that in any way gets people thinking about the future or projecting the future, especially now when it seems we're so obsessed day to day what the latest pandemic numbers are and whatnot? And it seems like it's harder now for people to even think about what's in the future because they're so worried even more so about what's going on right now.
You know, my entire career has been working with writers and creators on science fiction inspired projects, you know, and to work with real scientists and experts in the same sort of imaginative process, but about our very real future, it kind of changes my mental dynamic a little bit. I'm using a lot of the same creative processes, but I'm having to think in terms of like a reality where people will have to live for better or worse. And one of the things I wanted to do was, it seems like when you see a lot of futuristic artwork, we always get it wrong, right? No matter how much we try, we're going to rely on technology that we know and things like that. And, you know, in 10 years time, 20 years time, it's just going to look kind of silly or goofy. And I wanted to not focus on the technology. The technology can be a tool, but it can also be cold and not very personal. So I really try to focus on the people living in the future, and how could this future be hopeful and beneficial to them? So one example would be, for the National Museum of History, we did a sports innovation session, and a lot of the topics that kept coming up was inclusivity, and also being able to ensure that people with different abilities could play sport. And so when I created the illustration for sports innovation, I really tried to focus on those aspects, like how do we get the most amount of people involved in sport from all different backgrounds, all different, you know, race, religion, ethnicities, every kind of demographic. And how do we make sure to include people of all abilities? And that could be some sort of technological, you know, advancement. But instead of focusing on the technology, let's focus on the result that more people can enjoy and play in sports. And to me, that's kind of the crux of what I was trying to do, was just make it about the people and not about the technology.
Tochi, that leads me to a good follow-up for you then, when you're doing from the writing aspect of things. How much of it for you is focusing on whether it's human or a combination of human and something else, as opposed to the technology itself, which many of us are frankly pretty obsessed with? Are the robots going to get us, for example, as opposed to maybe how we will deal with ourselves as fellow humans?
I mean, it's the classic world-building conundrum, right? I think one of the mistakes that writers can often make with regards to world building is getting very obsessed with the, you know, the features, the levels of technology, you know, how many moons this particular planet has, the weather patterns, et cetera, when really, really good world building is not just about the features of the world, it's about the people that are moving through the world, or at least the analogs of human beings that are moving through the world. And to Brian's point, you know, in each of these stories, there are people living in these futures. And one of the things that I wanted to keep in mind was that no matter how sort of dire our future may be, we will never, as humans, lose our capacity for sense of wonder. And that was something that I really wanted to capture with these stories, and that I wanted to make sure wasn't sort of forgotten in the mix. And so, you know, there can be rising waters and whatnot, but, you know, how are we able to still, you know, bask in the beauty of a sunset, or really sort of take advantage of the sight of natural wonders, the experience of various natural wonders, no matter what new shape they've taken? The default state of humanity doesn't necessarily have to be us versus the planet, us versus the environment. I think there can be very beautiful instances of those things all living together.
But Tochi, how does that apply to mosquitoes? Don't we all hate mosquitoes, especially as we're more and more worried about viruses and diseases right now? How did you work that one out?
Oh my goodness. Well, the best fiction that has come out of me has resulted from me writing into my fears. And so the idea of mosquitoes having any sort of like social utility and necessity was probably what that, I mean, if that's not dystopian, I don't know what is. But that, I think it was really cool because it forced me to rethink our relationship with the environment, with the various flora and fauna around us. I mean, I've never met a mosquito I didn't want to swap. But the idea of them as, you know, carriers, not necessarily of disease, but of vaccines, was fascinating to me because it's not something that would have occurred to me necessarily, you know, outside of the conversations that I was having in these workshops.
That is Tochi Onyebuchi, an author. He and artist Brian Miller, just two of the contributors from ASU's Center for Science and the Imagination, who worked with the Smithsonian on Future Visions 2071.